Have you ever wondered why the filters you use in your home, like your refrigerator, furnace, or air conditioning unit, cost so much? They don't have to. With DiscountFilters.com, you'll find top-quality household filters at a fraction of the price. Replacing the filters in your refrigerator, furnace, and AC unit is important to do often to ensure the air in your home is fresh, clean, and healthy. However, whoever remembers to replace them? With DiscountFilters.com, they'll send you an email reminder when it's time to change and also when it's time to replenish. They have filters to match any fridge, furnace, or AC unit, and if you aren't sure what filter to get, they also offer helpful filter finders and experts available if you need them, ensuring you get the right fit. And with free shipping and returns, you can't go wrong. Visit discountfilters.com/untitled. That's discountfilters.com/untitled and receive 10% off your order. Again, it's discountfilters.com/untitled to get 10% off your order. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey, Adam. I don't know when this podcast is airing, but
today.
Couple weekends ago. Today. So this past weekend, I was in LA for the RPF showcase.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
You saw Art and
yes,
Gang?
Yes. And yeah, and Brad Fife. And so the RPF, which we talk about extensively, the Replica Prop Forum, every once in a while, they get members together, regional. So this is their Southern California meetup. And it was actually held at Frank Ippolito's shop.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Frank volunteered to host it. It was a perfect space. There was a
he had a big pizza,
and the organizers, Brad Fife, who was one of the RPF guys,
Jedi Fife.
Yeah, he I think so. He got ordered the biggest pizza I've ever seen. I don't know how they bake this. It was literally that wide.
I don't know how they delivered it. It looked like it would have to come in a pickup truck bed,
and it's square, and then had their logo, RPF logo, in pepperoni on it. And it was baked all at once.
Wow.
It was amazing. But anyway, the people who showed projects there, people brought their props, their costumes. I met Ryan Nagata, who is...
Mr. Nagata, I have a couple of his pieces. He's an amazing maker.
Amazing fabrication, and he also spacesuit aficionado.
Yeah.
So he brought his Mercury, his new Apollo suit.
Oh, his Apollo suit isn't finished.
Hold on.
Is it?
He just finished his Apollo suit, so we shot a video about
this
it.
You
have one of his Snoopy caps.
I got one of his Snoopy caps.
And
it's unbelievable. I actually have a real piece of beta cloth up there, and it's almost indistinguishable from his work.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And he screen printed the beta cloth pattern onto fabric.
Wow.
Yeah, Nagata is...
I didn't realize that they had a mesh top on those. I guess it's so you didn't get hot.
Yeah. In fact, actually, I was doing some testing of one of my suits the other day, and I got a direct experience of why you want something covering your brow in a helmet. But Nagata is
he's
a maker of a completely sort of alien-level detail.
It's sweat.
Okay. But if you think that I'm like have a crazy high attention to detail, Nagata is like a factor of two above me.
Awesome. Yeah, it was amazing.
Cool.
Super cool projects. We shot a bunch of videos. People brought their Jurassic Park Jeeps and their Explorers out there.
Oh, no way.
So it was a nice get together. And we'll have videos on that in a couple weeks.
Oh, that's awesome. Very exciting.
Yeah.
I should have one up here.
Speaking of obsession and research.
Yes. Well, I wanted to talk about research because all three of us are people who have done it for a living and do it as a hobby and really enjoy delving into a subject and learning and gathering what we can about it on a deep level. And I wanted to talk about that because we've talked to some about my research techniques, but I'd like to talk about your guys as well.
Well, so when one of the things I realized really quickly in college was that having access to the university library at a major American, major, university, wherever it is. And this, of course, to date myself, I went to college in the fall of 1993. So when we checked into school, we were the first wave of kids that were issued a Unix or a VAX account. And we had access to Usenet, IRC, Gopher, Archie, Telnet,
wow.
Like basic console shell commands. Yeah. Links, I don't think they had on the system at that point because nobody could use, why would you use the web? It makes no sense. And email. So yeah. so we
the
had
web was for amateurs.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You'd find a lot of stuff on Usenet, but ultimately if you wanted, including like reprints of scientific articles. But at the end of the day, you chomp down to the library, and I quickly realized that I was really good at finding stuff. Not just good at finding stuff, but like I would walk into the library and I would just get lost and start reading stuff, and I'd pull random books off the shelves and start reading. And then the internet came, and that was a whole other thing.
It's a problem of indexing. It's how the internet and search engines, early search engines and the current search engine, Google, indexes and takes data back versus how the databases, research databases, LexisNexis, are indexed and tagged, and it's a completely different paradigm.
Totally different paradigm, and we tend to think culturally of the internet as a sort of a neutral repository, but it is so not. And when you're trying to find information on something, one of the first sort of sea changes in my doing research was I realized, oh wow, the internet doesn't have everything on it. In fact, it's only got the top layer of everything on it. There are many places it goes very deep, but for the most part, we're talking about a surface layer, and it's a great place to start looking, but it's not where you're going to necessarily find everything.
Well, the thing that I found is that in the old days, in the early days of the internet, pre-Google, which to me, the shift on the internet was when Google came, all of a sudden search was good. And before that, it was something you kind of muddled through to maybe get to something that would lead to three links down the thing that you actually wanted.
Right.
In the early days, finding stuff on the internet was about using Lycos and WebCrawler and like using six different search
engines
and comparing results and finding something that was like what you were looking for.
But even still, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say, then it became, how do you ask the machine the question that you want the answer to?
Bingo.
And that was a sea change. And the people who are good at that were the people who ended up doing the stuff that Norm and I do.
Right. Boolean searches and...
Yeah. Just even where to use quotes.
Right.
Like, literally, you can find almost anything you want on the internet just knowing where to put double quotes and how to rule out the things that you don't want to see.
But again, because of the way Google prioritizes the search results, you're still looking for things the way other people are thinking about
yes.
them.
So it's a psychology of thinking, how
did this get stored?
Yes.
Right. I mean, look, there's a reason you pay for LexisNexis. Mm-hmm. The indexing on it is ridiculously robust, and they know it, and thus finding stuff is really easy, but it takes a tremendous amount of energy and time to do that indexing, and that's what you pay for. You get value for your dollar when you're searching on those databases, and there's a reason they're paid for by every major organization that has to do any kind of research.
Whereas in Google, it's how many... you type in the question, the first two words of a question, and that's what's informing Google, all right. those suggestions that people search.
Well, we found on Mythbusters that Google was great for getting an idea of where people might be doing things, but you had to go to PubMed and the other scientific publishers to find the actual information on the stuff. And even then, sometimes it's so... Now the noise-to-signal ratio for published scientific papers gets pretty high, and you don't know whether you're going to some link dump site or the actual server where the stuff is stored.
Well, I mean, the good news is a lot of scientists are now publishing their papers on open sites. I don't know how you pronounce it, but the physics repository, physicists seem to be leading this early on, and astronomers and stuff like that. And they were posting full versions of their transcripts, not just the abstract.
Right.
On in addition to the place that it ended up being published behind a paywall, someplace that everybody can go read it, especially if they're, and I think that's now a requirement. It was an executive order.
Yeah.
If you're a publicly funded researcher. That stuff is really good, because we'd gone from a place where we had access to LexisNexis and some of that stuff to not anymore. And like suddenly you're making queries that end with LexisNexis transcript or,
abstract.
Yeah. How can you find the forum post where somebody who didn't know better copy and paste it out?
Forum post is one of the sea changes my son thing too had when he was trying to find. So he was like, oh, I can't make this piece of electronics work. And I said, okay, what you're going to do is you're going to search, how do I make the pause button stop doing the wrong thing? And then add the word forum.
Yeah.
The game I like to play is what would my dad ask, right? Right, like, how exactly. do I phrase the question the way my dad would type it in the computer? My thing doesn't work right, and it's an Apple.
It's amazing how effective that can
be. Oh, it's super effective.
Whenever you're searching for something, one of the toughest things is finding a name for it. And it's not just the actual name, but the name that other people
like tools, parts,
so
all
if
that
it's
stuff.
A specific problem, you know, it's, you know, a screen problem, the name for how what the actual
it's
problem
everything.
Is like five different things.
Oh,
there's
no, it's
a technical name. There is the common, you know, in this form, people call it one thing.
I'm writing a book right now. I guess you could call it a book because I'm 40,000 words into it about the research of a specific prop. And in this prop, there's a small little article, of which there are a gazillion in the world. So go ahead and try and search for this article. It's a bottle. It's a little glass bottle. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and search for little glass bottle. And then lose your mind. Try and find a specific shape of glass bottle. I searched for weeks. Hundreds of searches on Google. Hundreds of searches on eBay. Searches on Amazon. Searches on Flickr. Mm-hmm. Searches on Pinterest. Yielding nothing. So then I start doing... When I yield nothing after all of that, because the noise to signal ratio is so high, mm-hmm. I started thinking, well, let me actually stop being so specific.
Attack it from the side.
Let me go from the outside in. So I start searching glass bottles, and then I start searching glass, antique glass bottles. Let's do that. Glass bottle taxonomy. Then after searching some random glass bottle link that I was literally based on exhaustion, I see a bottle that doesn't look exactly like the one I want, but the lip looks the same. And moreover, it's called a specific thing. So I add that word and I realize it took me that long to learn that glass bottles are classified by the lip, by where the cork and the cap go. Mm-hmm. That is one of the primary classification indices for bottles.
Wow.
And so then I add this name. And the moment I add this name, I find hundreds of the bottle I'm looking for. And it turns out to be absolutely trivial to find the very specific lid and type and size of bottle that I wanted all along. It's Rumpelstiltskin. Once you know the name, you break the spell.
It's one of the things I do. I feel like I always feel like I'm being obnoxious because I know you're really busy. But a lot of times I'll be like, hey, what's that thing that's in your shop on the wall? What's the bendy wood that you use? What's the bendy composite wood you use? Because like that's Luan, just.
Yeah,
for the record, I had no idea how to spell Luon.
Right.
So I typed, how do you spell Luon? And spelled it L-E-W-O-N or something like that. And it ended up, Google was like, oh, do you mean L-U-A-N?
Yeah.
The other thing I do a lot is if I know what something looks like, I'll do a generic and then search Flickr and Google for that thing. Because Flickr has bazillions of images. They're all tagged really well, or a lot of them are tagged really well.
Flickr, the story of Flickr has been sad with how Yahoo almost ruined it, destroyed it.
Yeah.
Or did. I still use it. I'm still loyal because I found so many things on it. For instance, when I was researching the Mecha Hand, mm-hmm. there was a specific radio tube, and Flickr was where I realized, oh, there are radio tube junkies out there who do close-up beautiful photographs of every one. And I scrolled through about 600, and then I found the one that I was looking for.
Well, and Flickr was collecting images way earlier than everybody else. So, like, one of the things that I found is that Google is amazing for everything that happened after Google came out. But for things that happened before Google came out, it's a real mixed bag, right? Sometimes you're not so good. Sometimes
and Flickr doesn't index on Google.
And Flickr does index on Google.
Do they?
It's
search
weird.
Doesn't, but thumbnails do.
Thumbnails do.
Right. I have found searching Flickr directly much more fruitful than trying to do image searches.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
But doing image search on those two places will a lot of times give you a picture of the thing you need.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can figure out the name. Do you know about TinEye?
TinEye.
What?
Well, TinEye was the first reverse image search before Google built it into their...
I must say, I have found reverse image search to be a very difficult thing for me, specifically because I'm often looking for a part or a piece of something, and it's very hard for any of the reverse search engines that I've used, and I've mostly used Google's, to extrapolate what I'm actually looking for.
So it's really good at finding the same image used in different places.
Yes.
High resolution.
It's really good at finding, like, if there's a chunk of text, like if you wanted to find all the labels from your ejection seat, you could probably find a pretty good representation of that because it'll OCR the text and it'll look at the font and all that stuff.
Okay.
What I love using it for is where other images are used, you always deep dive into that page.
Yes.
Because why the person used that image is more interesting.
Right. Where did they get it? Right. I've often found the exact thing I wanted, but it was on some bullshit page that had nothing to do with the actual subject matter.
Right. And then you image search image and you get, exactly.
Try reverse image searching Will's face.
What's that?
If you reverse image search me, it gets real weird these days. Because of all the Oculus badness. Poor
That's
Norm.
Hilarious.
Norm's easily most spread photograph, I think, is a dumb picture of me wearing a pair of virtual reality goggles.
That's accidentally Norm. Labeled Norm?
No. Norm took the photo.
Oh.
Norm's most famous photo, far and away. Billions of people have
you
seen it
on
at this
Oculus.
Point. Jeremy brought his Oculus over when he got it day three or whatever.
Hilarious.
We shot a video. I made a stupid face and,
Yeah. Hey, Jeremy, we had Jeremy on Mythbusters this week.
Really?
Yep. We had a project. I can't tell too much about it because it won't air for a little while. But I had a project that needed some Arduino programming.
Mm.
My crew understand that we have had many problems with custom designed things over the years, especially electronics and metering can be quite devilish. However, trusting Jeremy's prowess, I said, I want to use this technology to do this. And everyone tried to talk me out of it. And I was like, no. I really think this is possible. It's not too difficult. I'm going to bring in this guy, Jeremy. I'll hook him up with my producer and they will work this out. And then Jeremy can come in and build this thing for us. And it worked magnificent.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome. So good.
I'm going
that's
to use it
to
on the show tomorrow. And it's a stunning little thing that added a totally new dimension to what we can do experimentally.
One of the things that you said when we did the captain's chair was every time you've ever fooled with these like microcontrollers that are an Arduino is essentially a prototyping board. You're not supposed to use it in a production environment. You said, this has never worked right. It's always been a problem, blah, 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 blah. And then it didn't work right and it was a problem. But eventually it worked right and it was not a problem.
It was not a problem. And the captain's chair is still working magnificently.
Beautiful.
I was really happy to bring Jeremy into the Mythbusters fray.
What about when you're troubleshooting something? Like when you're figuring out how to do something and you want more information about how to do that thing, do you go to YouTube? Do you go
I have to say I found YouTube. YouTube is almost like a last resort because of the wheat to chaff ratio.
Indexing video is tough.
And the time it takes to watch a video.
Yeah.
Like I can read 35, 40 web pages in the time it takes me to watch a 5-minute video.
I one of my favorite hacks, which is hard to find in initial results, if I'm looking for how to modify a piece of electronics, I search service manual. Mm-hmm. And that can be very fruitful. Recently, I had eBay deliver me the results I wanted. Our house, the house I live in, here in the Mission, was renovated magnificently back in the mid-2000s. We bought it, and we haven't changed very much in it because it was done so nicely. I'm still good on
You're
time.
Good. I was just checking.
And all of the bathroom fixtures across the whole house are Grohe, which are high-end bathroom fixtures. Mm-hmm. They do, one handle does many things. Yeah. Now, Grohe, they're beautiful devices. Sometimes, I will say, Grohe, they're not easy to use for a neophyte. Like, you have to be shown how to use it, and then it makes sense.
That's bad design, though.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
No, I agree. But the other problem is that your average plumber confronted with a Grohe who takes it apart to put it back together, well, in my experience, and I've had three experiences, they put it back together wrong.
Oh.
Because it's such a complex piece of equipment. So I eventually found a Grohe instructional video for the make and model of my bathroom fixture and was able to troubleshoot it and fix it using the YouTube video. That worked beautifully.
There's nothing. I learned I've done this before. I think we maybe talked about it on the podcast before, but every time it happens, I have to relearn how to do it because it's something I have to do every, let's say, 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
I had to snake my tub this morning. Now, using the snake, there's a knack, right?
Yeah, there is totally a knack.
It's about slow turns and letting the weight of the thing push the just an inch or two at a time, and then not pushing so far that you go beyond the hair plug into what I like to think of as the poo zone. That was bad.
Yeah. In the bathtub?
Well, if you go
Who's
far enough.
In your bathtub?
If you go far enough,
do you know
enough,
what
Adam,
it's called when you poop in the shower and then push it through the checkered
urban
shower
dictionary
grate.
Official name?
This has a name. Is it's called the waffle stomper.
I knew it was going to be waffle something. That's gross.
I think I might have said that on the podcast.
Brody.
Before.
Wow. Anyway.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, my fear is always I'm going to push, because if you go far enough into the drain, you're into the main septic sewer line out of your house.
Oh, right. That's true.
Poop
that's,
goes there.
Go pretty far to get.
Well,
to
you'd
that.
Think that, but it turns out not as far as maybe you think.
So I once in an old apartment in New York pushed too hard and drove it through the rusted section of an elbow buried in the wall.
Oh my.
Yeah, that's
God.
Bad.
Yeah.
I did that. I did that.
Why did the water drain so fast?
I did the one time I've done that was when I was trying to improvise a coat hanger into a snake. That's a bad idea because it'll poke right through one of those thin elbows.
Yeah. There was a period of time in the mid-80s, late 80s, when I think I was the worst neighbor in the world to have when I lived in Park Slope, Brooklyn. I'll tell that story someday.
Okay, that's a story for another
day. That's a story for
another
day.
Maybe we'll get one of your neighbors on the talking room.
Oh, God. I mean, I'm sure that if I told this story, some guy might have a post-traumatic stress disorder reaction to what I initiated in his apartment. I'm so sorry.
Anyway, research.
Yeah. Yes. So YouTube, like I said, the biggest problem I have with YouTube is the first third of every single YouTube video.
Yes.
Is a pointless exercise in credits and music.
Oh man, our videos are really long. It's the first third.
No, it's the first third, the standard thing of like, 30 seconds. Here's some guy that built this thing, and I got to spend 2 minutes hearing how, you know, seeing music and shots of his shot.
Oh my God. Okay, this is. Why doesn't Google have this thing, the thing that porn sites have, where when you mouse over a thumbnail.
Oh, it gives you all the...
It gives you the progression of the video.
Man, that would be useful.
That would be useful.
Why not? Innovation.
Why is all the innovation of online video being pushed by porn?
It turns out. Let's see, anything... books.
Service manual has been a great thing. Also, searching hack, adding the word hack.
Books.google.com lets you search inside millions and millions of books.
I have found that to be tremendous.
Super useful.
For really esoteric bits of research recently on some Kubrick props, I found some great information on a very old book that was out of print. On Google Books.
And stuff from those museum books, catalogs.
Museum catalogs. Those can be very hard to find and very expensive if you do find them. So having them archived is terrific.
Norm alluded to it a little while ago, but I think it's worth hitting again. Using the type ahead search on Google where it gives you a list where you type in how do I, and then it fills in the top 10 queries that start with how do I, gives you incredible insight into how other people think about search and how, more importantly, that how the aggregate thinks about search, which lets you shape your queries to be smarter and better and more potent.
I also perform all my searches incognito because then they're not biased by your own Google
account. Oh, nice.
Yeah, so like if you often get Adam Savage or Tested results because you visit Tested a ton.
I do sometimes whether or not I'm searching incognito because I'm a lot of my own link wrong.
Right,
yes.
I mean, that is the peril. Of,
yeah. I will say, so talking about... the internet as the surface of things. I just want to give a practical example that came up recently. I'm obsessed with arms and armor, chainmail, old stuff like that. And I frequently will left my own devices on a plane, just do an extensive image search on armor. And I recently, while doing it, found a lovely catalog from one of the best armor collections in the world is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. And if you didn't know that, you should go there and check out their armor room because it will blow your frickin' mind. And they've released catalogs over the years of new acquisitions. And I saw one on Amazon for a pretty good deal, you know, $15. And so I grabbed it. And immediately was confronted by a little catalog, 70 pages, full of images that I'd never seen before. Oh. Never seen anything remotely like it. Filigreed shotguns from the 19th century and inlaid bits of internal armor that I'd never found in all of my Google searches. And this is exactly what I mean. We can become complacent thinking, I'm seeing all there is. But really, you are seeing the stuff that people are selling and doing in their research. People aren't digitizing these catalogs and throwing those images up in an indexable way. So you've got to understand that there are deeper places to go, and catalogs and stuff like that for auctions and for museum collections are a great place to go deeper.
Another one that's great, especially if you're dealing with old hardware and stuff like that, are like the Koval's antique books that tell you how to price and guide different eras of antiques.
Yeah.
Will give you the names for bits and pieces that you never knew. Like if you want to know what mortise, I know what mortise and tenon is, but if you didn't know what mortise and tenon is, 5 minutes with a Koval's book will let you know to how to tell the difference between mortise and tenon and 15 other things.
And speaking of actual positive and negative results of research, I have to say Prop Store of London has some great archives of imagery. But when you're searching movie props, one of the main things you're going to come up with is a site called Your Props, where people archive their own collections. I hate that site. The resolution of the photos on that site is so tiny as to be completely useless for any research purposes. Now, I also understand that there is a certain faction of prop collectors who don't want high-resolution images of their props out there online, and I say, to the hell with you.
If you're going to post them,
stand that crap.
If you're going to post them,
if you're going to post it, post it so that people can see what you're doing. Again, I'm big about the open source stuff, and yes, I'm protecting some sources of stuff that I'm not supposed to know about or people want to keep close, and we all do that in the prop community. But if you're going to put pictures of your stuff up online, make it nice so I can see it. When I go to your props, I feel, look, Amazon does the same thing. Enlarge image, boom, whole window comes up with the image the same size.
Sometimes it's big though. It's like 30% of the time.
Almost
maybe.
Never.
Yeah. It's for media. It's books, movies. That stuff has big covers.
Drives me
else
crazy.
Is small.
You got to right click and find the source and change the extension. So it's not the resize version.
Isn't that called hacking? According to the federal prosecutors.
Wait, what? That's against the law.
People have been prosecuted for changing URLs and prosecuted and convicted of hacking. Because of zealous prosecutors.
We need to buy an island and move to our own country. And on that note, I think we'll wrap it up today. If you guys have research suggestions, other favorite books,
to research.
Yeah, like Audubon books. I love having books of nature stuff so that I can look and find plants and pick birds and all that.
Rumpelstiltskin stories. Stories of when you figured out the simple name of something that took months to find out, like my glass bottle search.
Yeah. We will be back next week. I think the promotion is definitely still running. If you want to sign up for a Tested premium membership, you can go to tested.com/membership. You will get an amazing poster of Adam's toolboxes from
ILM.
I can't wait to get mine. We haven't printed them yet. That's going on right now. You get a ton of extra content as well and a bunch of other awesome stuff.
As well as weeks of builds.
Weeks of builds, access to our party. There's a week of build going on right now, Norm.
That's right.
What are we building this week?
We're painting some stuff with Frank Cablito.
Oh, I did.
Really cool.
Learning how to airbrush.
I did two horrible things to Neil Wynn sculptures. I did one really nice thing to another sculpture. So we'll see in a couple of weeks. See you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
We'd like to thank Discount Filters for sponsoring today's show. Stop worrying about the air quality in your home. DiscountFilters.com will send you an email reminder when it's time to change and also when it's time to replenish your refrigerator, furnace, and AC unit filters. They have filters to match any fridge, furnace, or air conditioning unit, and if you aren't sure what filter to get, they also offer helpful filter finders as well as experts who are available if you need them, ensuring you get the right fit. And with free shipping and returns, you can't go wrong. Visit DiscountFilters.com/untitled and receive 10% off your order. Again, that's DiscountFilters.com/untitled to get 10% off your order.